Happy Father's Day to all of you. I know that you have made a huge difference in this world because of the difference you've made in your children's lives. Thank you for that. And I'd also like to acknowledge our own fathers or those who played the role of father in our life, because I know also that they have had a huge impact on us and helped us become who we are today. And so we give thanks for them today on this Father's Day. And so today I'm actually talking about perspective. I'm talking about how our perspective creates what it is that we experience, what it is that we anticipate, how it is that we see things. Our perspective creates how we experience the world. And so I love this. In The Art of Possibility, he tells a short story about perspective that I really love. It goes like this. In a famous experiment, the Mian people of Ethiopia were presented for the first time with photographs of people and animals, but they were unable to, quote, read the two-dimensional image. They felt the paper, sniffed it, crumpled it, and listened to the crackling noise it made, and nipped off little bits and chewed them to taste it. Yet people in our modern world would easily equate the photographic image with the object photographed, even though the two resemble each other only in a very abstract sense. He goes on to say, recognizing Pablo Picasso in a train compartment, a man inquired of the artist why he did not paint people, quote, as they really are. Picasso asked what he meant by that expression. The man opened his wallet and took out a snapshot of his wife, saying, "This is my wife." Picasso responded, "Isn't she rather small and flat?" Perspective creates what we anticipate to see and how we experience things. And so the title of my talk today is What's in a Name? I'm talking about how we define something, what we name it, what we call it, how that creates actually what it is that we see, how that either enhances or diminishes what it is that we notice, how it creates what we expect and how we experience that thing. It's kind of like having a hypothesis. You create this hypothesis, and then you start looking for information out there in the world that confirms your hypothesis. I don't know if you've ever heard this, but I've heard that the Inuits, the Eskimos, have 14 different words for snow. Wet, heavy snow, fluffy snow, dry snow, all these different words that describe snow, which when they call it that, they see it. We only have one word, snow. So when we look at snow, it all looks the same to us. We don't notice the differences. So having that name for it creates the anticipation of what you're going to see and actually enables us to see things differently. And so the name of something, which actually means the nature of something, carries a lot of information with it. And in turn, because it carries that information, it creates expectations and assumptions on our part of what it is that we're going to experience. And so when I say something is a cat, we all have an idea of what that means. It means that it has soft fur and that it meows, and when you pet it, that it purrs, and sometimes it might bite you if you don't pet it correctly. We know that it will curl up and sleep in the sun all day long, and it doesn't obey you unless you have a water bottle. Because we know cats don't like water. So just saying that something is a cat sets you up for all this information that you have back here and what it is that you're going to see without even thinking about it, because it's subconscious. And so if I name something a giraffe instead, you then know that it's going to have long legs and a really long neck, and it's going to have a long 14-inch black sticky tongue that can get between the needles of a tree and take off those tender leaves. You know that it's going to be able to run and cover long distances in a very short amount of time, and that it eats leaves. But you don't anticipate that it's going to purr or that it's going to chase things that move really quickly like a cat does. So the title cat or giraffe, the title of anything, gives us a lot of information about it. It sets us up to the thing that we're referring to. So naming something sets it up for us. It sets up our expectations of it. in turn what it is that we're going to look for and what we notice, therefore how we experience it. And so I read a story this week that kind of depicts this. It says, a small town chamber of commerce invited a speaker to address its annual dinner. The community's economy was bad. People were discouraged, and they wanted this motivational speaker to give them a boost. During her presentation, the speaker took a large piece of white paper and made a small black dot at the center with a marking pen. She then held the paper up before the group and asked them what they saw. One person quickly replied, I see a black dot. Okay, what else do you see? The others joined in, a black dot. Do you see anything besides the black dot? She asked. A resounding no came from the audience. What about the sheet of paper? She asked, I'm sure you've all seen it, but you have chosen to overlook it. It's not necessary that we choose to overlook something, but by that one person naming that black dot, that's what everybody was focused on and what everybody saw. That is a black dot on a paper. That's what it was named. And so what happens then is if we name something bad, like the ending of a relationship or the ending of a job or a friend moving away or even an illness, when we name it bad, it sets us up so that we don't see anything besides what is the bad. It sets us up so that we do not actually see or notice the good that is inherent in it. We don't see the gifts that are in the middle of that thing that we're naming bad. We don't see the opportunities for something greater to be experienced or expressed or known through that thing that's happening. We don't see it because we haven't named it good. But instead, if we name everything as good, if we know that life is always for us, then we look for that. And because we're looking for it, that is what we find. We actually actualize that thing. And then we make it real in our experience. And so I think back to when I was in my late 20s and had just had a relationship end and moved into an apartment all by myself for the very first time. And I hadn't lived there for more than probably 3 days when someone broke in and stole my TV and my VCR. And of course, I was devastated. Here I am living by myself, and now I don't have a TV and a VCR, and what am I going to do to entertain myself? It was one of the biggest blessings of my entire life. I quit watching TV. It was a time in my life where I had just started this spiritual path and started this path of doing therapy and self-reflection and changing my life. It gave me time to read and to journal and to spend time with myself and to discover things that I like to do and to make art. It changed the course of my life because that TV and VCR were stolen. So naming it good allows us to find the good that's in it. You know, I think we all have had times in our lives where we name, say, the ending of a relationship bad. And when we name it bad, then the only thing that we notice is the loss and how awful we feel and how lonely we are. But I know instead when we come from that paradigm that life is for us all the time, then and when we name it good, then we discover those gifts that are inherent in it. Maybe we discover a wholeness that we never knew that we had. Maybe we discover a strength that we'd not ever accessed before that. Maybe we discover the wisdom in our own decision-making and gain confidence out of that. Maybe we learn to like our own company. And it's the same thing, whether we name something good or bad, it's the same exact thing if we name something difficult or easy, or if we name something scary or exciting, or if we name something possible or not possible. We set ourselves up to experience it that way. Naming it so makes it so in our experience. And so I had seen a show a while ago about that young man who was hiking and rock climbing and got caught in the rocks in Joshua Tree. And he was stuck there for 3 days and ran out of food. He only had little energy bars after day one and ran out of water and knew that he was going to die, planned to die. There was a crow that flew over one day, and he knew that was a sign that death was imminent. The next day, he couldn't believe when he was still alive. And he ended up cutting off his own arm to get out of there and talked about the excruciating pain of cutting through that nerve in his arm. First, he sawed through the bone and sawed through the flesh, but to cut that nerve, said it was like being hit with a bolt of lightning, how bad it hurt. And then he hiked out for miles before a helicopter came and rescued him. And in that interview, he said he wouldn't take it back. That it changed his life so profoundly and who he is today. And he still today does all sorts of sports. And he does public speaking and has realized what's important and about the love in his life. All those things, the gifts that were contained in it. If he could name that cutting off his own arm good, could we name things good? What if we named everything good? What if we named every single thing that came upon us in our lives, what if we named it good from the get-go? What if we knew from the get-go that life is for us, therefore this must somehow be for us too? And looked for the gifts, and looked for the opportunities, and looked for what is greater that is seeking to unfold itself through the situation and through us. Absolutely. Naming something creates the perspective in which we experience it. In The Art of Possibility, he tells a really quick thing that just is great about this. He says, a shoe factory sends 2 marketing scouts to a region of Africa to study the prospects for expanding business. One sends back a telegram that says, situation hopeless, no one wears shoes. The other one writes back triumphantly, glorious business opportunity. Stop. They have no shoes. What we name it sets us up for how we're going to experience it and what we're going to do with it. So I don't know if you know that actually the word name means nature. And so I love this. So when you hear someone do a prayer and say, in the name of Jesus, what they're actually saying is, in the nature of Jesus, I say this prayer. In the nature of knowing there is only one, one in whom I am immersed and who fills my being, who is the only presence and power and life thing that exists in this universe. From that place of oneness and knowingness, I say this prayer. In the name of, in the nature of. And so we also know many people in this world who name God Father. And so on Father's Day today, we're going to look at that a little bit. And so that word Father implies a lot of things. It has a lot of information within it. It implies qualities and characteristics and ways of being. And so if we look at that archetypal Father, some of those qualities and characteristics are strong, of strength and being powerful. Some of those characteristics of that archetypal Father are being a protector, keeping us out of harm's way, keeping us safe. Part of those characteristics are being a provider, providing us with everything that we need to live a fulfilling and a rich life. And another one of those characteristics is to be wise, a wisdom that can guide us and lead us into making good decisions and making good choices in our lives. No wonder people use that word Father. I love contemplating and thinking about that one infinite presence and beingness, that spirit that lives within me as provider and as protector and as the wisdom that will lead me and guide me and keep me safe and lead me to the best decisions and choices in my life. And at the same time, you will never hear me use the word Father to refer to God. You will never hear me use the word He to refer to God. Because for me, what that does is it makes that some being outside of me who is separate and distinct and apart from me. It anthropomorphizes God, which means to make God a person. Then all of a sudden God is made in our image instead of us made in the image of that which is infinite and perfect and beautiful and magnificent and infinite potential itself. So, and if we make God a person, what that also implies, we can project all sorts of things onto that presence then, like God is too busy for me, or maybe God is too distracted, or maybe God doesn't approve of what I'm doing, so God's going to withhold something from me, or maybe God is grumpy today, so I'm not going to get what I want. It sets us up for all sorts of putting personality on this principle of life. So instead, I recognize this as a presence and as a power and as a principle of infinite potential, a principle of good itself. I recognize it as an energy and an essence that permeates everything, that expresses within everything, that is everything, as power and wisdom and wholeness and truth and light, and the source of all good. I am immersed in it. You are immersed in it. And you are filled with it. Like an ice cube floats in a glass of water, we float in that presence. And we are, like an ice cube is made of that water, we are made of that presence. And so today, as we celebrate Father's Day, whether we had a father who possessed any of those qualities or not, we celebrate that infinite one within us that expresses as those things, that infinite one that is always closer than breath and near than hands and feet, that infinite one that is right here. Not only does that infinite one contain those qualities of wisdom and provider and source and protection, but we contain within us the one that is the wisdom that leads us and guides us into the perfect decision. We have within us that one that is the wise one that keeps us out of harm's way. We have that one within us that is the power, that is the strength that we could ever need to accomplish anything in this entire world. We have within us already, contain within us all the time, that infinite source of good. It's within us and all around us, like that ice cube in the water. And I know that as children, we absolutely needed to be protected, and we needed to be provided for, and we needed to be guided. And we still do as adults. And we are, because that one is inside of us. That infinite indwells us and surrounds us and fills us and fills our lives and expresses as our life and is our life. We are immersed in this love intelligence. We are immersed in this source of good, and we are made of that. We are emanations of that one. Our life is the life of the divine. Our life is that one expressing itself here on planet Earth as the life that we're living. And so then naming it indwelling infinite source of love and good is different than naming it He, God, the man outside of us. Naming it that indwelling source of all good enables us to experience it, because then we look for it, then we expect it, then we anticipate that. We all long to experience that one, to feel it in our lives, to know that it is right where we are all the time. We long to be aware of that presence in everything that we do. And so what I invite you to do then is to name it in a way that will enable you to experience it as you want to experience it. Name it love, or name it peace, or name it life itself, or name it infinite potential that indwells me. Whatever name works for you creates the experience that you will have of it. Name it so that you are able to see it everywhere. Name it so that you are able to feel it within yourself. Name it so that you may become aware of it all the time. And then revel in that one. Revel in that beauty and in that good and in that potential and in that love and in that peace. Revel in that presence. But name it in a way that enables you to do that. Name it in a way that enables you to feel safe and to feel provided for and to feel like you are led and guided. That one wants you to thrive and live your most magnificent life. That is what the universe wants for each and every single one of us. That which is closer than breath is the I am of your very being. That one that is closer than breath before time began and will be unto the ends of the earth is the very essence of your soul. It's who and what you are. You cannot ever be separate from it. That good of the universe, that I am of your beingness. And so I bless you all on this path of discovery, discovering who you are and discovering what you are, this path of discovering that infinite one that is beyond names, and yet we name it to be able to wrap our brains around it just a little bit. And so I bless you on this path of unfolding and becoming and being. Blessings to each of you. And so I invite you to join me in a spiritual mind treatment. How good it is just to answer this call of our own spirits, this call to once again turn within and to turn to that infinite one that is magnificence itself, that is beauty and glory, that one that is the infinite potential and beingness of everything that is seen and unseen. That one in whom we live and move and have our beingness within. This thing I call the divine. This one that is the ground of all being. This one that is closer than breath and nearer than hands and feet. I recognize that each and every single one of us is an incarnation of that presence, of that life, of that beauty and that glory. That we are here each unfolding that one as our very lives and as our very selves and all that we are and all that we bring to this world. What a blessing it is to be here living this life immersed in this one. What a blessing it is to recognize that we are never alone, that we are always immersed in that presence and filled with it. And so today, I recognize that yes, indeed, we are provided for. Because that infinite good of the universe, it is its nature to unfold. And so I know that that good unfolds in our lives, meeting every need before the need is ever spoken. That our desires and our heartfelt longings lead us into this life of fulfillment. And that the gift is already made. And so today we say yes to that gift. I know that we are provided for, that we are protected, because that wisdom of the universe guides us in all that we do. It keeps us safe, guides us to be where we should be and not to be where we should not be. That we live in this presence of good, and that that is our experience. And so it is with a heart filled with gratitude for recognizing our lives in this spirit today, that I actually release this prayer into the very law of my being, knowing that it is the law of perfect action. And so I release this prayer, knowing that we are blessed indeed. And so it is.